Explosion in a nightclub in China just kills 25, injures 33. They say they will catch whoever did it and deal with that. We'll be back in a moment with our two guests. We're going to take your phone calls, but I do want to ask them the question about 2012 when we return on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, gentlemen, I'm sure you're aware of 2012, the Mayan calendar end date. Do you pick up anything at all going on about this?
Of course, there's a great deal of discussion, and the date itself has obtained its own level of archetypical symbology, so it's very easy to track now. There's a very high emotional quotient, all of it anxiety and fear-based. Those descriptors that come out are, to be very blunt about it, grim.
Grim?
Yes. The indication, now bearing in mind, we always err on the side of the extreme.
True.
Okay, but the indications are that the 2012 date will only be a problem for a very few.
Now, when you say grim, though, and then a very few, it's kind of conflicting.
Very clear that the process of our entering into alignment with the galactic center and the galactic rift, which began in 1998 and is about halfway through now, will culminate in a continuation of the degradation of the biosphere that we've all enjoyed for a long time, and will place extinction problems on a great number of species, including our own, over the course of these next 5 years.
Interesting.
Okay. George, there's a tendency of people to take what's going on in today's news events and project it forward in a linear fashion. And so when you read reports like the world runs out of fish to make fish and chips out of in, say, 2040, there's an implication made for the linear mind that there will be people here interested in eating fish and chips. And I'm not sure that's a good bet.
Well, you might be right about that. But in terms of 2012, anything could happen then.
Well, no, we're actually getting some indicators that oddly enough, fall into line with the electrical view of things, or the electrical view of the universe, the plasma-charged mm-hmm. view of the universe. And basically what it's saying is that the descriptor sets we're getting are pointing to a giant field effect, if you will, a spinning magnetic body such as the Earth inside of another spinning magnetic complex system such as our solar system, in alignment with a very giant field of energies beyond which we're able to sense and deal. It's going to cause a great deal of problems, and in fact already has, on our local environment. These are going to continue unabated and, in fact, accelerate to the point where stress will be placed on the species as a whole.
It's fascinating that you're picking this up, too. It really is. I mean, I've always believed that people are starting to talk about this date, and it's obvious something is going on.
We started actually picking it up in 1997. It was what convinced me to abandon the original intent of the program. The original intent of all of this was to make money on the stock market based on the emotional quantifiers around stock exchange kind of stuff. And once I started picking up more references to the sun as in solar system going strange, as opposed to sun as in Stanford University networks, I soon became rather absorbed in the sun going strange and sort of thought, well, I don't really need to mess with the economic aspect.
Okay, let's go to the calls, and let's see what everyone has on their mind. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hello. How are you?
I am fine. Thank you. And where are you calling from?
Dallas.
All right. Go ahead.
I would like a little bit more clarification on the September 19th prediction. I know that in September, the president is supposed to come back and ask for more money from Congress to continue the war, and they're supposed to decline it. Does that have anything to do with the September 19th?
It will factor in a minor sense, in that we're not picking up. I mean, we've got plenty of stuff for our entities that relate to the officialdom and government and so on. But what we're seeing for September 19th at this point, in a large emotional fashion, is about one-third related to the planet, and that is to say the climate, etc., and about one-third related to economics. And but that economics aspect is also related to the climate. So it may be that, I mean, the way we're interpreting it now is that two-thirds of this emotional change are related to a perception shift relative to the planet on which we live and the universe in which it runs around. So basically, imagine a situation where all of a sudden everybody gave up the idea of humans being involved in global warming and that there was nothing we could possibly do to affect the situation. Therefore, hope goes out the window. Therefore, behavior changes, and we get a different set of emotions.
Alternatively, we could be looking at something like floods continue, the banding of weather continues, and all of a sudden in September it dawns on all of humanity that we're going to run out of food, something like that.
And so in that context, the political aspects are certainly at play, but they're relatively minor.
And so the bees maybe could do some, be part of it.
All of that is certainly a component of it, but we're looking for something that would shift the emotional basis upon which the population acts on a pretty much daily kind of a thing. So we're looking for a big shift, and lots of people are aware of the bees, but it doesn't have a big emotional resonance.
Okay, Cliff and George, George, your website, urbansurvival.com, what can people get when they go to that, first of all?
Well, if I can differentiate the two sites,
all right.
Cliff's site is the long range, what we're expecting to happen, and my site, Urban Survival, is about the sort of the play-by-play as this stuff pops into mass media. The bees, for example, that was characterized about a year ago in Cliff's work as the green death and the emergence of the green meme, and so we were able to watch the bee colony collapse disorder pop into mainstream media, and now it's kind of fading out. And yet here in Texas, among the farmers, there's considerable concern about the lack of bees.
Actually, though, it never popped into the mainstream media until a few months ago after we pounded away at it for a long time.
It was part of this overall cluster of words around two aspects. One was green, meaning in the sense of environment, and the other was death. So it was all kinds of various different things about environmental degradation, so to speak, not merely the bees. That was just merely one component of it.
Do you see any huge earthquakes in the United States at all?
Yeah, actually on the West Coast. We're getting some rather indications of some weird ones here where we're going to get three large quakes. And, of course, because we're U.S.-centric, we tend to think of them as being here. Now, bear in mind, we had the idea of 300,000 people being affected and a land being driven back to a previous age prior to the Banda Aceh thing. But we were actually centering that more in California, more at 30 latitude and more towards California. And, in fact, of course, it was on the other side of the Pacific. So, given the fact that we err frequently on geographic references because of the way that those come through, just like with numbers, we still show three earthquakes that will be peculiar in the sense that each one will be felt as though, oh, boy, we dodged the bullet on that one. There will be a little bit of a pause, and that might be days. I mean, we just can't tell time that well. And then there will be another one. And then finally this last, the third one. And that third one is being described as rather strange in our part one here because it'll have some interesting effects in terms of there will be some kind of a very public wedding that'll get interrupted. And
That's
we're
strange.
Having these kind of
public wedding.
Somebody of some prominence is going to be getting married on or about that date, and the earthquake series is going to interrupt and postpone.
All right, sounds like an L.A. wedding.
Something along those lines.
Yeah.
See, that's how we would want to interpret it because that's at the forefront of our mind, but usually that is wrong. Like I'm always telling Mr. Ure, nope, that's the first thing out of your mind, so forget it.
I got to start tracking the trades now. Who's going to get married out here in Los Angeles?
Seeing this after the or around the period of the time of the equinox. So bear in mind that we work on a lunar calendar that focuses on these astronomical alignments. And so we have a tendency to place these earthquakes closer to September than December, but between the boundaries of September to December.
Let's go to our first-time caller line. You're on the air with us. Hello there.
Hi.
Go ahead, sir, and where might you be?
I'm in Santa Clarita, California.
Okay, go ahead.
My question concerns global consciousness in general. I'm not sure if you're familiar with remote viewing.
Yes, I've run across that.
It's like, I guess the government has admitted that they studied it. The CIA has used it. Edgar Cayce supposedly was a user of remote viewing. Now, my question is, this WebBot program, is it possible that it taps into that consciousness as well?
It certainly could, whether it's deliberate or an unconscious leaking of it, so to speak. You know, your Aunt Frida is a remote viewer and just accidentally lets something slip into the conversation, and you pin it in a fora to your buddy about gardening, and, oh, by the way, the earthworms are going to do this because of earthquake coming. And she saw that in remote viewing, and we would certainly pick that up, but we wouldn't discriminate it. We wouldn't know we were picking it up.
Okay, great. Next up, let's go to our wild card line. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hello?
Yes, take it away.
Yeah, I wanted to know about, what do you guys think about as far as, you know, what's going to happen in 2021 as far as what's going to happen as far as December 21st this year?
Okay, and he means 2012. Quick recap just for him.
Actually, we think that the problems will be greater between now and 2012, and there will be serious problems affecting a large scale of the population that may include a lot of people dying.
And Cliff has not gotten into too much depth on it here, but there's this nasty item of global coastal event, which is showing up in a major way.
And it has been for a long time, so it's going to be a biggie.
A real biggie. Big enough that Cliff is building a boat.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I'm only at 200 feet elevation here.
Like an ark?
No, like a survival pod, if you will, because we face some very realistic probabilities, not possibilities, but probabilities that we must prepare for. Bear in mind that we pick up things that we're not necessarily supposed to see because people are not as conscious of security as they should be. So occasionally, because of the way that we do our programs, we actually get real conversation snippets. And we can tell sometimes the sort of the general sense of who is corresponding with whom. Not email. We don't do that deliberately, but in fora, people are less cautious than they should be. And we know, for instance, we have evidence, let me put it that way, we have evidence that suggests that the military is planning for a five-year timeline on the loss of the Greenland Glacier and anywhere up to a 60-foot rise in sea level in the next 5 years.
Which is devastating.
Right,
oh, yeah.
And we're thinking even 30 feet in my local area in Puget Sound means most of my bridges are gone, and any getting from point A to point B is going to involve the water.
And the problem, George, gets worse because Cliff and I run out these scenarios all the time when we're talking about the data. You know, we're going through things like, okay, how many oil refineries in the world are left if you had a 40-foot rise of seawater?
Or nuke plants.
I'm sorry?
Nuclear plants.
No, nuclear plants. Yeah, I mean the whole thing. And so when we talk about people are going to be lucky to be around for 2012, consider what would happen if part of the glacier structure in Greenland and part of what's in the Antarctic were to break off land, slide into the ocean. We could have that kind of a problem crop up any day.
Okay, wild card line, it's your turn. Hi.
Yes, hi. This is Angela from Covington, Louisiana.
Hello, Angela.
Hi, George. And I wanted to mention to your guests, they were saying that they believe that we're going to be in for some pandemics. I'm sorry, I can't get the word out.
Yeah, a pandemic.
Pandemics,
correct.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot, senior, you know. But, you know, I mentioned to the lady that answered the phone is we received in Louisiana, for the first time ever I have ever received, a booklet. Usually we are cautioned on what to do for hurricanes, right? But this booklet came, and it was all about what to do for epidemics.
Have you looked at the what the government has already got up at pandemicflu.gov?
Yeah, and it's a 5-6 page, and it covers the bird flu. It covers all, and that I found very curious. And now tonight, you are talking about that as in the future, and I'm wondering if there's not, you know, the coincidence is just,
I don't personally accept the idea of meaningless coincidence.
Yes. And why did we receive this booklet out of the blue all of a sudden? Never received one before.
You can think of it one way here, in a less than threatening way. It's not necessarily evil intent. It's not necessarily the government going out and deciding that there's going to be a pandemic or something. Think of it as more of an innocuous way that's in line with our work, that there's emotional waves that go through the population, like the pet rock or some of these other strange things. That why do they take hold? Well, here's a situation where the idea of a pandemic has reached to the core and it resonates within lots of individuals. And so every time that an individual who it resonates with comes across the idea, they reinforce that energy and try to do something about it, et cetera, and it builds on its own. And thus you get the brochure out of the blue. But in fact, what it is a cresting part of an emotional wave that may have been building for a couple of years.
Do you see any kind of nuclear explosion in this country at all?
Not looking for it. That's an issue, too. It gets back to that same terrorism and all of this. Then you start getting into intent and where might it be and so on. Let me say that those things that we've done, anything that we were to come across, if we were to find that in our serendipitous mode, I wouldn't tell you, but I might pass it on to somebody who might find the information more meaningful.
Huh. Next up, let's go west of the Rockies. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hello, good evening, George, and to your guests. I'd like to direct the question. Firstly, are they familiar with the work of Ed Dames, the technical remote viewer?
Sure, I've seen his stuff, yeah.
From what you have said regarding the imminent global catastrophe, it seems to me that that could very well be within the same realm as Ed Dames's projected
his kill shot,
catastrophe.
I don't see anything in conflict with that. In our view, that it's a field effect that's being felt here in the solar system would certainly show up as the sun going a little crazy and spitting things out. So it makes sense.
You see anything regarding what he has insisted will be a shuttle complication preceding this event?
We actually see an abandonment of the ISS, yeah.
Oh, really? Of the International Space Station?
Yeah, correct.
Oh, well, and you know what? That came very close, too.
See, that's our problem, because we're picking up emotional waves, which are really going to reflect in the global media stream. Sometimes if everybody has a fear about something happening and they talk about it, that's what we're picking up rather than the event itself. So we can't tell at this stage if our predictive language has yet been fulfilled.
And it is. I've got to tell you, I am fascinated by both your work and where does it go next? I mean, how does it evolve technologically?
It won't. I'm not bothering with any of that. Time is too short. We're pretty much stopped at this stage because universe wants us to get it to this stage, and we're productive and effective for people because they keep signing up at our huge costs. And so it's like, okay, it's supporting them. But to be honest, there's very little point.
Interesting. And so you're not giving up, though, are you?
No, I'm continuing because the universe obviously wants the work to continue, and it is interesting, and I like doing interesting things. But,
all right.
But
well,
I don't expect that I'll necessarily be here in 2010
Let's hope you are, Clifford. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. We'll take your final phone calls. Exciting breakthroughs in ESP, which will redefine centuries-old questions about human consciousness. That'll be our next program on Coast to Coast with our special guest, Paul Smith, author of Reading the Enemy's Mind. He's a remote viewer. We'll be back in a moment. We'll take final phone calls on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, George and Cliff, I mean, we've talked about some things that are pretty doom and gloom. Is there anything good coming out of this?
George? There's a story just crossing now about what could be the lead in to this big decline release period economically. China's stock market dropped 5.25% in today's trading session.
That's huge.
It would be the same as the U.S. market dropping 800-900 points. So you bet, that's a biggie.
Now, you know, when the Japanese Nikkei drops, we drop. What about China? What's going to happen in the morning when they open up the markets here?
My guess is it's going to be, I wouldn't be surprised to see maybe 100-point, 150-point down day.
Down. Okay.
That's just a guess.
Yeah, because, you know, quite honestly, if the Chinese markets go down and they need to generate cash, guess where they're coming to take it?
Well, there is that.
That's a problem. But again, is there any good news out of any of this? Do we foresee any good news?
We have a tendency in our model space to, as I say, concentrate on negative values because they've been assigned a higher numeric value to a negative emotion. So as a rule, we don't see good news if that's really the way to look at it. Now, it's not 100% terrible because we often err on the side of the extreme, and it's not as bad as we thought. So just because our interpretation says that the flooding is going to displace 7 million doesn't necessarily mean that'll occur. We see some level of displacement and a lot of emotional angst and so on, but maybe we won't get that 7 million displaced. On the other hand, I have to be rather candid and say that the reality of the biospheric degradation going on around us does not argue for a positive outcome.
Okay, let's go back to the phones. We'll go to our wildcard line. You're on the air with us. Hi there, where are you calling from?
New York City.
Okay, welcome to the program, Big Apple. Go ahead.
Hi, George. I think you're swell. Now, where should we live? I'm sitting here with a lot of angst. Where should we live to be safe?
Don't look to us for a place of safety, because it is my opinion that there is no such thing.
So you don't see any particular location that might not would be hit less than, or where should we not be?
I wouldn't, if you wanted to avoid an immediate fiasco, and by immediate I mean within the next 5 years, I wouldn't be living too close to any coast. The implications are that we will for sure lose the glaciers. The evidence is that scientists say, oh yes, glaciers will melt and they will add 120 feet of water, but it'll be 2050 before that occurs. And what they're actually doing is they're taking the total amount of history showing the sea level rise and dividing it by the number of years in which they think it occurred. And they are wrong. And it does not actually work that way. One day a glacier will decide, that's it, I'm going. I've got enough water underneath me, and I'm going to head to the sea. And it'll take 3 days for the Greenland Glacier to totally shift into the sea. And we'll have a tidal wave that will go around the world many times as a result of that. And that tidal wave will impact coastal areas, sometimes 200 and 300 miles inland, and it will drown millions of people in the underdeveloped parts of the world, including Bangladesh, many of the third world islands, and so on. So it makes no sense at all to live near the coast if one expects this to occur over the next 4 or 5 years. That's okay. Probably the best kind of thing we can do. But there's an old saying that the Swedes have, and in this area up here in Puget Sound, we've got a lot of the old Swedes kicking around, and they've got this saying that Father Time has woven the skein of your life the moment you're born, and you can live in a hole as long as you want, and it won't add a single day. So take comfort in what you've got. And,
makes sense.
You know?
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
You're very, very welcome. Let's go to our first-time caller line. You're on the air. Hi there.
Hello, George. Hey. I'm like you. This is a fascinating topic, and what a great show.
Thanks.
My question for George One and Cliff is whether or not, you know, often I get a desire to go out seeking information and I don't really know why, that when an event happens, they find out later on, hey, you know, right before, you know, 9/11 or an earthquake, there was quite a lot of people getting information on the structural integrity of buildings or...
Sure.
Or,
the meaning,
you know, like right before people wanting to buy Energy Star appliances right before a spike in energy prices.
Yeah, and that does happen. Cliff and I, because we read the reports, well, Cliff writes them, and I'm privileged to read probably more than actually sees public eye. We're both in squirrel mode right now, so. Does that mean that our predictions that we're looking at are any more accurate, or we're just particularly paranoid because we look at the grim side of things. But, I mean, we haven't even gotten into the shortages on food, the restrictions on travel, and some of the other things that are implicit in the rest of the data.
And let's go to the caller's question, though. At a core, what we're speaking about is universe speaking to the individual. The universe has spoken to individuals saying, going out, look for, you know, structural integrity on buildings or whatever.
Right.
And they don't really know why. And the why, to a certain extent, it may be unimportant for that individual. It may start them off on a trail. I try and very actively pay attention when universe speaks. Usually I'm rather stupid and it has to slap me upside the head a couple of times. But basically, I get the message sooner or later. And I, for people that are aware of that, that's a huge gift.
Okay. Now, do you pick up anything? Because I have a feeling there are a lot of people zoned out right now. They just seem to be brain dead, comatose, zombies. I mean, staying at red lights. They don't move when it turns green.
Sure.
I mean,
we're picking up all kinds of things relative to energies from space. And humans are much more an antenna for energy than we're willing to admit, and we don't understand the concept of energy beyond the electromagnetic spectra. And it is my supposition that some of the stuff we're picking up in our data is pointing to actual human-affected or effective energies from space that will cause us to be a little bit bizarre in our behavior, probably individually and collectively, as things go forward.
Huh. Well done. Something's happening. I can feel that.
One of the descriptors, by the way, George, that popped out of Cliff's work 6-8 months ago was this fall period, late summer to fall, we would see a sense of unreality or almost a surrealism about life emerging. So there's definitely some kind of a warp going on there.
Okay, next up, Wildcard Line, your turn. Hi.
Hi, this is Robin calling from Pittsburgh.
Hey, Robin.
And I'm really just sitting here. I'm leading up to my question, but I'm mesmerized by everything he's saying because it's exactly what I've seen, and I see where the 3 earthquakes are going to be, and I would like somebody to get in touch with me later so I can leave him my number. And we can compare because everything he says I've documented and I agree with. And everything's happened. But my one question is, does he see volcanoes erupting at Yellowstone?
We have to be really careful with geographic descriptors. So I have a tendency to avoid those. Just like I have a tendency to disbelieve numbers that percolate up through our programming, I have a tendency to disbelieve geographic specific location pointers because they're so frequently wrong. Because when you get into place names, all you're doing is counting words, and we don't like operating at that level. It is true that we have a number of indicators for volcanoes, but we have nothing specific for a Yellowstone caldera kind of stuff. And most of what we're seeing, to be quite honest, those geographic descriptors that show up most frequently are pointing to the very edge of the Ring of Fire from San Juan Plate down through Ecuador, Peru, and in that area, and then a little tiny bit over from Indonesia north into Japan. And it is our supposition, based on what we're looking at, that the volcanic activity is a prelude to a plate shift. But no, we don't see anything specific for Yellowstone, and if it came up in any quantity, I would instantly suspect it as being a conscious intrusion into our work and would disregard it. A
couple months ago, someone predicted a huge earthquake for Los Angeles right around this time period. Is that person possibly accurate? What do you think?
I think accurate. I don't know about time. That's our big issue is our timing clues are a little vague. Bear in mind that we didn't know it was 4 months out for the force-driven, electric-driven water.
Right.
We just knew we were within our short-term values, which go from 3 weeks out to about 3 months.
So we could say sooner than later.
Correct. I would suspect that we're going to see some kind of seismic event of some significance that will cause it to generate some significant level of emotionality before the December solstice on the 21st.
East of the Rockies, your turn. Hi.
Hi, good morning, George and gentlemen. Cliff, I would like to suggest a kernel for a paradigm shift that I think would be very, very practical and get to the heart and science of what it is that you've been about and explore something new. Since the early part of 2004, I've been working on some new occupational classifications paradigm for health, public health, and ecology. In pursuing some morphology and grammar and getting back to groups like the Linguistic Data Consortium at Penn State, I came to a very simple realization with regards to natural language processing. And it revolves around the distinction between prescriptive language and descriptive. Now, most of the natural language is descriptive, and to translate, that means everything goes. That's probably why those in AI and expert systems have a very difficult time in trying to get these guys and gals to hone into a standard, but natural language doesn't want to stay to a standard.
It must
They're
evolve.
Not prescriptive.
Correct.
So what I'm going to suggest is that in moving towards a new dynamic for what it is you're about, looking at the prescriptive community and virtually the logical community, let's say the scientific community, but leaving it in the context of natural language and that distinction between prescriptive and descriptive, provide you with a new basis for the information gathering that you've been about.
That's very interesting, but we also have a real serious issue with academia, which dominates all of the prescriptive features of our society, and it's a hidebound, peer-reviewed, structured view that does not allow for the anomalies, because we must allow for that evolutionary bleeding edge, and that's what we're attempting to pick up. So we're constantly looking for the anomalies that would be disregarded by academia. Make sense?
I'm sure that mainstream science would look at what you two do and shudder.
Thus the self-described nut job, yes.
Yep.
Yeah. That's why we don't have Suburbans in our front yard.
Wildcard Line, you're on the air. Hi there.
Hi.
Yeah.
This is Nancy.
Nancy.
I would like to know if your guests see anything going on for the San Fernando Valley, like flooding.
Flooding in the San Fernando Valley.
Yeah, because it's very low.
Yeah, we actually do have that. We have the loss of much of the area all the way into the Salton Sea, but that's associated with the global coastal event. And since the values for that are still building, we know that we're looking at something that's within our long-term values, and so we think it's out less than 3 years, but we can't say how much less.
Oh, my God. Very deep water?
There's where we get into the comparison between predictive work and what's evidentiary. If you go on out and look at the amount of water that's locked up in glaciers from which everything could come, and you disregard the idea of water from space, which I really don't, but for the moment, let's just disregard that, then we have to say that even if Greenland itself goes, the estimates being bandied about are about half of what would actually be, so at least 60 feet in ocean level.
Oh, it's going to go over the mountains.
It's going to be quite severe. That's why, you know, I'm kind of locked into place myself. I'm not in a position morally or economically to relocate to some high altitude. But we have to bear in mind that the planet is under extreme distress. Humans are not causative agents in this. This can be proven very easily with the mathematics that were developed by Buckminster Fuller in doing his assay of resources back in the 30s. And we can prove that the sun's causing all of our global problems, and it's getting worse. Carbon dioxide is way high. We know the militaries of the planet are assuming that the glaciers will melt within 5 years.
See, this is what I think the Mayans knew. When we talk about 2012, I think we're talking about a solar event.
Yeah, I think you're talking about a process, and it began in 1998 and won't be completed until about 2018.
Yeah, you may be right. And then 2012 puts it almost right in the middle.
Correct.
Right.
That's why we say in around here, we're half past human, but we're also half past Hunab Ku. The Hunab Ku is the Mayan name for the galactic rift.
Let's go to our first time caller line. Take it away. Hi there.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good, thank you.
I really like everything that you had to say, and in the language that you have put it in, and very, you know, well put together. I would like to help. I know with some of the numbers you were giving as far as some of the qualified people that you would help to seek out to help with the consciousness, collective consciousness for the greater good. I would like to do anything I can that would be helpful.
Well, now that's, he brings up something kind of interesting, and that is, what can an individual do to try to make things better? Assuming what you do is correct, and I think it is, and you tap into this consciousness of so many people, can individuals start to change events with their minds, you think?
That's a really good question, and I hate to have people ask me that because I'm out there floundering on. Basically, what I tell everybody is I'm not your guru, okay? I don't know. I'm out there.
We need you.
I know, but I'm out there as much stumbling in the path as anybody else. But I take comfort from a very old saying that these three things I treasure, love, contentment, and humbleness. I treasure love because only those who are loving can be courageous. I treasure contentment because only those who are content can be magnanimous. And I treasure humbleness because only those who are humble have a true authority and command. This is from Lao Tzu. And it is true. And if you keep that kind of stuff in mind and go to your spiritual center, how can you go wrong?
You kind of remind me of the Wizard of Oz, because I bet if we pulled the old curtain back, we'd see you there with some old
well,
IBM computer.
You would not want to see me.
Some old IBM computer spitting out basically descriptors and predictors of the planet on this little computer.
Well, it's almost that bad. My computer is dying. It's so old, and I had to order a replacement.
They do change quickly, don't they?
Yes.
Commodore 64, George.
Okay, the website's halfpasthuman.com for you, Cliff, and for you, George, it is urbansurvival.com, two different websites. I want to thank both of you for being on the program.
Anytime.
Our pleasure.
All right, you both of you take care. And again, we'll be back again tomorrow with our special guest, Paul Smith, as we look at some incredible new breakthroughs with ESP. And for all of you, I want to thank you for participating in our July 4th special program. And as I've always said, if a holiday falls on a scheduled work day, we'll be here for you, your family, and that's what it's all about. For Dan Galante, Wayne Roberts, Steve Carr, Tom Danheiser, Gina Salvati, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Laudisor, Ross Mitchell, Alan Corbett, Stephanie Smithy, and Punnett and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.